And my first guest this morning is Councillor Aidan Farley of the Social Democrats and Clane Maynooth. Good morning, Aidan.
Morning, how are you?
I'm grand, thank you very much. We're speaking about Black Friday, obviously brings Christmas to mind for many. Christmas parking in the area. Have you got an update for us from the meeting you had?
So we discussed that at the MD meeting, and the decision was to remain at the same in terms of time. Kira, obviously we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where, let's say, we remove the parking restrictions and what would that do is essentially slow down the movement or ongoing movement of cars. Let's say if people decided to start parking and leaving cars there for the day, that could negatively impact the experience of shoppers, but also for local business as well. So we've voted to keep it at the same for now. So that I just don't have the figures right in front of me now, Kira. But that what it looks like. I think it's 90 minutes, and then after that you move on. I think it's the first 30 minutes free, and then it's the usual kind of experience after that for every hour.
Okay, Aidan. About the feasibility of installing a pedestrian crossing. This is the OR403 OR407 junction. That's Clane Main Street and the College Road.
Thanks, Kira. Yeah. So this has kind of come up first. Recently with a couple of residents who, I suppose even when I was walking to school, and that's not today or yesterday, that kind of road junction was quite a dangerous one. So if people kind of located at the Esso petrol station in Clane, walking across on that petrol station side towards the solicitors, then heading that way into the village. It's very wide at that stage to give trucks and both HGV traffic a wide turn onto the left towards Selbridge. But what we've asked for essentially is that the council look for some form of safe passing for pedestrians. There's currently nothing in terms of a stoplight system or a zebra crossing, for example. So the council are going to do that. There is ongoing work, as many listeners will know, with regards to a bypass of the ring road just up further north there towards Kilcock, but we do still need some sort of pedestrian crossing. So the council will do their assessment there and come back to us, and hopefully, again, it won't be in the short term, unfortunately, but we do have some positive news there in terms of the council's willingness to look at some form of measure there.
Okay, getting back to local property tax monies, you've asked about the progress for the installation of a wheelchair accessible swing. That's in Prosperous Town Park.
And the town park has been a real, real success story, I have to say, in the public realm section of Kildare County Council. I think it's one of their shining lights in terms of the projects in recent times. We're seeing families and young people using the town park and Prosperous really, really regularly. It's a wonderful news story. But Councillor Wise and myself last year had been contacted by a number of parents of children, really, who use wheelchairs. And to be fair, there's a lot more needing to be done to make sure that site is fully accessible for everybody. So we allocated local property tax funds last year to install a wheelchair swing, a wheelchair accessible swing, and the council have updated us that should be purchased before the end of year this year, installed in quarter one of next year. So good news there again, that hopefully in the next 2 months or so, we should see the installation of that equipment there.
Okay, perfect. Just before you go, any updates for your local area in terms of, you know, trying to stay local and shop local this Christmas season?
We do. We've a number of initiatives. Actually, as a party, we launched something last weekend just to encourage people to do exactly that. We have a lot of local shops, certainly in Clane and Prosperous, where people are really starting to come out and offer some great deals. So we've got local butchers, for example, in Gormley's and Prosperous, who I would really recommend people getting to for their local meat for Christmas and beforehand even. But again, the likes of Bob and Kate's, there's some wonderful shops in Clane that really it's well worth a visit in to have a look before Christmas.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. You take care of yourself. That is Councillor Aidan Farley of the Social Democrats, Clane Maynooth Municipal District there on some issues, including Christmas parking and, of course, trying to stay local this season when it comes to your shopping. With that, unfortunately, my computer's freezing here, so I can't actually get to that text. But I was just mentioning during the newspapers about that story on the ambulances waiting in the at the toll booth area of motorways. And this in particular happened in the southeast of the country. But if you go down a little lower in the article on thejournal.ie this morning, it does actually actually mention us here in County Kildare, because of course we're a pinch point in terms of getting through to get to hospitals, maybe Mullingar around that area, at Enfield in Kildare, just around the Kilcock area, the M4 motorway. I'm joined by the Chief Executive of iCare Housing, but of course the owner of Lifeline Ambulance, that's Lifeline Ireland, that is David Hall. You're very welcome this morning. Unfortunately,
morning,
we're not
Kira.
Talking about something that is positive, David. It's just scandalous, that story this morning.
Yeah, look, the ambulance service has been in great difficulty for many years, and it's a combination of issues. And I think COVID probably in the last number of years gave it a slight distraction where, you know, a lot of excuses were given for bad performance and for, you know, the lack of availability of ambulances and the lack of utilisation of private companies and other services as well. So look, it doesn't surprise me that we have situations like this being reported this morning, and I'm sure there's many more of them that don't get reported, Kira. I think the ambulance service and the staff are probably the best in the world, and that's the most frustrating, most annoying. We do have, and I have a paper I'm drafting myself on the ambulance service at the moment, which I hope to publish at the end of this month, beginning of December, on, you know, the good, bad and the ugly in relation to the ambulance service. Like, it's most frustrating to have excellent staff, to have a very special type of person who is in the ambulance service, both private, public, voluntary, but the infrastructure doesn't lend itself to develop them right. I was just back from the States. I was in Orlando last week at an ambulance conference, and we have, by comparison, just give you one simple example, we have a paramedic program here that averages at 3 years and 4 years to the same standard as America. The paramedic program in the States is 1 year long. They founded paramedicine. They understand that, they develop it, and they acknowledge it very well. Yet for some bizarre reason, on an academic basis here, we have a complete detachment from a practical reality. We have 40 students in the University of Limerick studying to become paramedics. They spend their second year training in England, being paid by the NHS to do second person ride outs on ambulances to gain experience, when we're short people here in Ireland. So many, many issues arise around this, and ultimately lives are at risk. This is a massive casino, effectively, that's being operated. And one thing I would welcome, that in recent weeks the National Ambulance Service have engaged with private ambulance companies, and indeed have hired a number of ambulances of mine and other companies throughout the different parts of the country for non-emergency work. They have some bizarre obsession about not passing on emergency work to private companies, despite us being to the same clinical
standard. Why do you say bizarre obsession?
They've never rung. Like, you could collapse where you are now in Kildare. My main headquarters is directly opposite Intel. And on many, many occasions around Leixlip, and very distressing for my own staff and our own communities around the country, where we have an ambulance base within 100, 300 metres, 500 metres of an incident. I have this morning four ambulances parked outside the Mater Hospital. If someone collapses within the vicinity there and there's no ambulance available, they will not ring me. They will not ring any other private ambulance company.
Have you ever asked why that is? And have you gotten a straight answer, I guess?
No, the answer has never gotten a straight answer. That's happened for the last 16 years. For the first time ever, they've engaged with us in the last few months to hire ambulances to do routine transfers as part of the winter initiative, which I think is a very valuable move, very good move, very clever move by the head of the ambulance service, Robert Morton. I think it's a very good move to have done. I'm not saying that on a commercial basis. I think it's a very good first step that's happened. But it's 16 years since we did an emergency call for the ambulance service. And it's very frustrating for our own staff. It's very frustrating to hear and see incidents around the country where we may have had a closer ambulance that's there. And also, just to say commercially, Kira, it's very important. Against myself, I'll say to you that the rates charged for those emergency calls are €90, just in case anyone thinks that David Hall is on trying to promote getting emergency calls for a commercial basis. If anybody actually looked at this, they'd be embarrassed to say, why have you not rung these private companies? Because these prices that we submitted for these calls are now 10 years old. So it's very, very frustrating. It's very, very upsetting. And I'm a member of the public as well. I may rely, despite having an ambulance company, I want to be able to dial 999 in confidence to know that in circumstances that I or a family member needs an ambulance, that we will get one. I recently rang an ambulance in Dublin. I was outside Sidford Church driving past, and a lady had fallen and hurt her head and knocked herself out. I was told by the ambulance controller I was number 14 in a queue. Number 14 in a queue in the capital city in Europe in 2022.
And you know, and when they say something to you, because thank God, touch wood, I've never had to call an ambulance for myself or anybody else, but when they're saying you're 14 in the queue, are they also giving you a time? Because I'm sure they can't.
No.
Really?
No, they don't give you time, and times aren't given. You're told the next available ambulance will be given to you. And you'll see many reports. People can just Google and, you know, listen, look at the different various reports from various county councils around the country, from various members of the public, from various patients, from representative bodies, not just me as a private ambulance company. being perceived to have a go. I'm interested in the ambulance service. I'm interested in the ambulance service working correctly, and I'm interested in working with the HSC and everybody else to ensure it works correctly. And my own staff are deeply frustrated as citizens and members of the community. And we have the best staff, and the most annoying, just as I say, back from Orlando, the best staff in the world. I'm 110% sure we have the best, most committed, dedicated staff in the world, not just anywhere else. And they need to be given support. We need additional resources. We need to separate the emergency services from routine transfers and make more staff available. We need to cop ourselves on in relation to levels of training. We need to stop this obsession about having to have two paramedics on an ambulance. There's no requirement of two paramedics in the ambulance. We have data for the last number of years throughout the length of breadth of this country to the emergency services as to what skills are required by all the patients that have been moved and treated. That's the course that needs to be designed around the skills that are actually required, not what someone academically thinks somebody should be able to do, having 28 drugs being carried in an ambulance when the evidence shows maybe 8 of those drugs are used. If I'm a lower-leveled trained clinical person as an emergency medical technician, why can't I give cardiac drugs? What's the worst I can do, Ciara, if you drop over and you're dead? Kill you? You're gone. Why can't I give cardiac drugs?
Is there any answer to that?
Yes, do it.
No, is there any answer to that when that's asked?
No. Someone sits down and pulls out a guitar and sings Kumbaya and has a chat about what the academic nature of things are. Other jurisdictions are doing things differently to us. Other jurisdictions, we have the longest training in the world. The longest training.
Look, I understand. I've heard those stats. But what is it about us here that we won't, I guess, cop on the wrong word to use, maybe, that another way may be the best way and more successful for not only our country and any government that's in place, but the actual people?
Yeah, we see stories after stories. And look, we can't get to everybody, Ciara. There's no miracle. There's no magic carpet here that gets an ambulance to somebody very quickly all the time. The mistakes and issues and concerns happen. We've dedicated control room staff who just don't take phone calls, who assess people's clinical need. It's not a random nature. They do this on a very professional basis, and a very difficult basis to be talking to somebody in distress at the end of the phone, by the way, and trying to make sure that they're okay and sending some help to them. It's not an easy job by any manner of means. But we don't have enough staff, and staffing has been an issue for a long time. I know COVID was blamed over the last number of years. Now we've staffing issues being blamed. But I don't understand mechanically, and a very, very simple point. When you've got 40 students in a third-level institution training to become a paramedic, in the University of Limerick, why are those 40 people going to the NHS in the Northeast for a 12-month contract to fulfil a requirement for the regulator here to be a second person on an emergency ambulance to do calls when we're begging for staff around Ireland? Why does that simple thing happen? And that's an indicative issue in my mind in relation to the fundamental problems that exist. When we won't help ourselves, there's no point in us giving out.
And David, 0833 97 97 97 is the text line here at KFM. And Anna has been in touch to say, "Hi, Ciara. My husband had a stroke and the ambulance came from Kilkenny and we are in Kildare. 3 hours they were waiting." It's very upsetting. If you head over to the National Ambulance Service in Ireland, thank you for that text, Anna, by the way, they note about their emergency response times and they say they currently report on response times on an area basis each month. I'm on the website at the moment, David, and the response time performances reports I'm unable to get access to. It's just coming up as an error is the message I'm getting when I do click on it. Do you have any up-to-date figures that you can let us know about here, would say, in the county?
No, and that's a very concerning issue that arises on a regular basis, the lack of access in relation to it. Now, I will say in the National Ambulance Service's defence that I think professionally many people will have a look at this, and I think it's a very crude instrument, the response times. Utilising response times is a very crude instrument. There are other jurisdictions that would use clinical outcomes as being a better success. Like, you know, for me to get to you very fast, care is no good if you're not treated well. So I think there's a different level of care that gets to you, be it an advanced paramedic or a paramedic. So I think there are different ways of doing it. It's a crude instrument, but ultimately it's a great barometer to test the level of resources and access that's there. But it is not acceptable in 2022 where you have a National Ambulance Service, you have Dublin Fire Brigade, and you have a number of private ambulance services. Private ambulance services that are vetted by the HSE, on a tender by the HSE, of equal standing to the HSE, who are being ignored
because when patients are suffering and you know, at risk of dying, and is not good enough to have multiple control rooms. This is a small country, internationally speaking. To have two separate jurisdictions, effectively, between the National Ambulance Service and Dublin Fire Brigade, and also not having looking at the utilisation of fire services around the country as well as a backup to the ambulance service. That all needs to be integrated.
We are such a tiny country, and that's said time and time again, but we're a very wealthy country. I know there's a cost of living crisis. I know all the rest right now, but as a country, we are very wealthy. And Adrian has also been in touch on our text line, David. He says, regarding the service, 2 years ago, his mother was in hospital with septic arthritis in her knee. She was told at 2 a.m. to ring her husband to collect her, to bring her to another hospital because there was no ambulance available. Adrian says, just a disgrace. And with that, the story that sparked this conversation this morning was the fact that these ambulances don't have the electronic tags for the tolling booths, etc. You, with your ambulances, do you include an electronic tag, or do they have to stop?
No, we have the tags. We have the tags on the ambulances purely, and we pay the toll bridge. And we pay the toll bridge, by the way, when we're moving the organs. I coordinate all of the organ transplants and all the organs, being human organs, being transported around the country. And we have tags on the cars for that purpose too. Like, it's a crazy, crazy system. It is a crazy, crazy, embarrassing system. That, and it's not about paying €2 for a toll. This is about the whole system of having to get a toll tag relevant to a specific vehicle who could be transporting a heart to ensure it can go in the fast lane.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much. At short notice, popping on, speaking to us this morning, that is, of course, the owner of Lifeline Ambulances, David Hall. We appreciate you always have great time for us here, and again, at short notice. And just to remind people, multiple sources within the National Ambulance Service, they confirmed to thejournal.ie that most ambulances are not fitted with electronic tags, which would allow the vehicles to move through the motorway barriers unimpeded. Of course, David there touching on the transporting of organs and the fact that the system doesn't have these tolls. It's not about the price per se. Rose says, listening to the conversation on ambulances, Kira, where did the army ambulance come in? C3-4 parked outside the hospital on the Curra. That is Rose there. Rose, David is just gone off the line, but I'll see if I can get an answer for that one. Very interesting. Thank you for getting in touch. Of course, the text lines are open. Mary has been in touch saying she's surprised at certain situations why the ambulances can be so much quicker. John over in Newbridge says, regarding the army ambulances, they are parked on the Curra and cannot now be used. There are no crews left to operate them because of the government's inability to solve the crisis in the defence forces. That is what John says over in Newbridge, and hopefully I will get and I appreciate you texting in just to say, John, thank you very much, but we'll get official word on that also. We're going to reach out now in the next few minutes to hear about that one. We have, apologies, my computer's acting a little bit crazy today. Anne, hello Anne, how are you this morning? She says, hi Kira, Maynooth, Selbridge, Leixlip areas have no local ambulance cover on a Thursday since 2012, 10 years ago. When or where have we heard our elected officials raising this serious lack of public services? Maynooth, the only town in Ireland with 15,000 plus students plus university staff in the thousands. It is a complete insult to North Kildare citizens. Thank you for that text this morning, Mary. And of course, everybody is welcome to keep them coming in. Now, I'm joined by a volunteer with carepack.ie. She's also the one who came up with this idea. That is Geraldine Monaghan. You are very welcome this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Kira. How are you?
I am grand, thank you. Well, coming up with the idea, I want to start there. How did it, I guess, come to you before we get into exactly what it is?
So basically, it was just, you know, it was during the pandemic, Christmas 2020, and on the news the whole time was, you know, different nursing home residents who were very much isolated and cocooning. And just the loneliness that, you know, a lot of the staff were talking about that was bringing. And it just resonated with me. And I kind of thought I would ring my local nursing home and ask them if I got a few friends to send in a gift or a pick me up. Would they be open to that? And they said they would. I put it on Facebook, kind of just said, if I get a few nursing home names, to send a gift to. Would anyone be willing to do it? And it literally exploded overnight. And before I knew where I was, there was, you know, hundreds of messages coming in. And that's basically where it started.
It's such a gorgeous idea. I have to say the website is really aesthetically pleasing. I love your little logo of the two older people and a love heart, and you've got the kind of Christmas theme going on at the moment as well. It looks great. And it's noted here, 33,000 nursing homes and care home residents received gifts. That was through the Kindness Initiative in both 2020 and 2021. CarePack, of course, run by volunteers, which you are one of those. It's amazing what has happened. They matched 33,000 nursing home residents over the year with a kind volunteer who had sent them a little gift for Christmas. We're getting up to the Christmas period. We're speaking about Black Friday, etc. How can people go about and get involved, Geraldine?
So basically what they do is Stephen, the other volunteer, if you like, he created a website around the idea because I couldn't basically answer every single person that was messaging. So Stephen automated the idea. So if you go to carepack.ie now, on the front page, there's two different sections. There's like a blue button and a red button. And the blue button is for any nursing homes that would like to sign up their residents to receive this. It's free to them, free to everybody. And then the red section is basically anybody who would like to volunteer to send a gift to someone. So you just go to the website, press the red button, and then it will take you to a list of counties. And in there, then you just choose the county that you'd like to send to. It doesn't have to be the one that you live in. It can be anyone around the country. And then you say how many you'd like. You can choose up to four. And then once you follow through the instructions online, you will be emailed then the name and address of the nursing home for the resident and also just put carepack.ie on it. And then it can be posted free thanks to OnPost. Up to 1 kg of weight can be posted free to any nursing home in Ireland. And yeah, that's it.
It's amazing. And again, you've noted on your website on Post announcing on the 7th of November that they are bringing back the free post for the care homes for Christmas 2022, up to 1 kg availing of free post. With that, loads of people I know listening are, and our listeners here are so very generous, and Irish people in general, so very generous. People will want to know more information on, you know, what exactly they could purchase. Have you any ideas there for us?
Yes. So on the page as well, if you go in under info, there's frequently asked questions there, and there's a whole list of ideas. And they're kind of like magazines or a bar of chocolate or, you know, nothing over the top. You know, nothing. It's just a gesture, really. It's really appreciated. And we'll say, you know, a lot of the time you won't get the first name of the person. You might just get female or male resident, depending on the GDPR and privacy of the person. But, you know, sometimes, like I know there was one man in particular, he always stands out because his name is Michael, and somebody sent him a bar of chocolate with Michael written on the outside.
Oh.
He, you know, like his family.
Little things like that, yeah.
He couldn't get over this, like, you know. So it's just little things like that. It's the idea, you know, the nursing home staff have gotten as much out of it nearly as the residents themselves, because, you know, a lot of them have had parties around it and everything. You know, they wait till they're all in and then they'll have like a little party or whatever. And, you know, so it has just, it's win-win across the board, really, you know. So it's great.
Well, it's an amazing initiative that obviously founded the idea coming from you, Geraldine. So congratulations. It's really such a wonderful thing to do. Some of those ideas that you can post: magazines, crosswords, Sudoku books, writing paper, arts and crafts, wool. We were discussing wool later, actually, on Kildare Focus. We'll get an update from her in a little while. Books on Irish history, folklore, the soft sweets, chocolate that easily melts, sleepwear vests, any size, it says here, from small to extra large. And the deodorant, shaving gel, shower gel, shampoo, etc. All that toiletry stuff. More information, as Geraldine Monaghan did say, on carepack.ie, including the nursing homes in your area, or maybe you want to send it somewhere else in the country. It's broken down county by county basis. So it's carepack.ie. If you want any more information, you can give us a buzz here. It's 045 898 999. But that is volunteer with carepack.ie, Geraldine Monaghan, who came up with that. It really has to be said, wonderful idea.